one bump. A one, one bump. One, one.
God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I greet you with a greeting that is common among Muslims, Assalamu Alaikum, which means peace be unto you. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. Today we have our 42nd program in our series dealing with the social system of Islam. We'll be discussing the topic of rights of parents. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid, and I have joining me on the program, as usual, Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, Assalamu Alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Could I get you to quickly summarize and highlight the main points that we touched on in our program last week?
Okay. Last week we talked mainly about two major areas. One was a continuation of the discussion of the rights of the husband as they are manifested in day-to-day life. That's the obligation of the wife towards the husband. And the major part of the program really dealt with the rights of children. And basically we talked about three major areas of rights. One is the right to life, and we mentioned that that's why Islam prohibits abortion and female or male infanticide or killing children for whatever reason. A second was the right of legitimacy, that every person is entitled, that there is an inalienable right to have a known lineage, that right is not something that would be given or taken away or masked or confused, that this is another basic right for any child. A third, the major one, was the right for proper and adequate care, which includes everything from joy and happiness when the child is born, the celebration, preferably in the 7th or 14th or 21st day, some acts of charity, the right of the child for suckling or natural nursing, the right for maintenance, right of proper education, including, of course, the spiritual education, spiritual guidance, and also the right of just and equitable treatment if one has more than one child, and the warning in Islam of not favoring male against female or the reverse, that every child should be treated equitably.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, moving into the discussion of our topic today in terms of rights of parents, what does the Quran say about one's relationship to his or her parents?
Well, the kindness and good treatment of parents is mentioned in the Quran second only to the supreme value in Islam, and that is the worship of God. So immediately after the worship of God comes kindness to parents. You find that, for example, in verse 36 in chapter 4 in the Quran. You find it in chapter 6. Verse 151, you find it in chapter 2, mm-hmm. verse 83. In all of these places in the Quran, it says, worship God alone, and then immediately it says, and be kind or good to parents. In fact, in one place in the Quran, kindness and good treatment of parents comes as a decree or a command from God. This is a beautiful passage in the Quran, which says in the Arabic, وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا. And on in the English translation it says, your Lord has decreed that you worship none but him. See what comes after? And that you be kind to parents, whether one or both of them attain old age in your life. Say not to them a word of contempt, nor repel them, but address them in terms of honor and out of kindness. Lower to them the wing of humility. Notice the expression, I'll comment on that. The wing of humility. And say, my Lord, bestow on them thy mercy, even as they cherished me in childhood. These two beautiful verses require some explanation, some commentary on them. First, it says, don't tell them any word of contempt. The original word in the Quran in Arabic, it says, don't say to them, uffin, which is not even just contempt, an expression of what, impatience, lack of respect, even the word uff, you know, one should not say to them. Secondly, when the verse says, lower to them the wing of humility, this is a beautiful metaphor, because it reminds us with birds, mm-hmm. with lowering their wings for their youngsters or their offsprings out of tenderness and gentleness. A third remark on these verses is that they remind us with what parents suffered for us in our own childhood to bring us when we were all weak, totally dependent on them, and at times utterly helpless. So the question of kindness here in the Quran to parents is placed as a very praiseworthy act. In fact, for example, in chapter 19 in the Quran, which takes its name from Mary, the mother of Jesus, peace be upon him, chapter 19, in more than one place, it described as one of the great characteristics of great prophets is kindness to mother. It mentioned that about Yahya, or John the Baptist, in verse 14, and about Jesus, peace be upon him, in verse 32. In both cases, it says that one of their main good characters or traits was that they were kind and compassionate to their parents. May I add also one point before mm-hmm. you get to your next question, is that in addition to this broad commandments or directive to be kind to both parents, the Quran also singles out the mother for extra kindness and affection, and particularly in chapter 46 in verse 15, when it says one should be kind to both parents, but it says also his mother bore him in difficulty upon difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I'd like to turn to the person of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. What was his attitude on this this matter of rights of parents?
His attitude was the translation of the Quranic teachings, really, and molded by the Quran, and what he said really or did was simply an elaboration or explanation in real terms of what the Quran is referring to. Let me give you a few quotations. There are plenty of these, but I'll give you a few of them. In one of his sayings, as narrated in Bukhari, Muslim, At-Tirmidhi, and An-Nasa'i, that's in four different collections of prophetic tradition, he was asked a question. And somebody said, what kind of deeds are best in the sight of God? He said, first, to keep your daily prayers on time. That's one. Number two, to be good and kind to your parents. Number three, jihad, or struggle in the path of God. So he put kindness to parents in between prayer, which is the most important religious duty for the Muslim, and self-sacrifice or struggle in the path of God. In another beautiful saying also, which was narrated in Ad-Daylami in his book Musnad Al-Firdaus, the Prophet was quoted as saying that Al-Abdul Muti'u Liwalidayh, that is the servant of God who is obedient to his parents and also obedient to the Lord of the universe, is in the highest of high, that is in the highest of high in paradise. In other saying of the Prophet, he equated kindness to parents with one of the great values in Islam, jihad, or struggle in the path of God. In a hadith, for example, narrated in At-Tabarani, a man came to the Prophet and he said, I really would like to struggle and sacrifice myself for the sake of truth, but I can't, I'm not able to. So the Prophet asked him, is there any of your parents alive? He said, yes, my mother. He said, all right, go and be good to her, and you will get the reward of those who do pilgrimage and fight in the path of God. So it's almost the same kind of noble struggle to be kind to parents. In a similar saying also, a person came to him and said, I'd like to sacrifice myself, I'd like to struggle and offer something. He said, is your mother alive? He said, yes. He said, all right, keep close to her feet. That's where paradise is. Of course, that's a nice metaphor here, that of humility and humbleness, that keep serving her as if you're just at her feet, because this would lead you to paradise. And this is consistent with a saying of the Prophet that you quoted in several programs in the past, a beautiful one: paradise is underneath the feet of mothers. In another saying of the Prophet, he showed that the obedience or pleasure that one can bring and happiness to parents is like pleasing God. For example, in a Tirmidhi collection, the Prophet said that the pleasure of God is derived or comes from the pleasure of parents, and the anger and wrath of God comes from the anger of parents. That if you please them, you're pleasing God. If you displease them, you're actually displeasing God. Not only this, we find in other saying of the Prophet, he ties between kindness to parents and deserving forgiveness of God, as the sayings narrated in At-Tirmidhi, Al-Hakim, and Ibn Hibban. In the collection by Ahmad, the Prophet connected between kindness to parents and having some blessing in one's own life. In another saying, he indicated that among the people whose prayers is accepted by God, it's not rejected, among these categories are the prayers of parents, that when parents make earnest prayers for or against their child, against their child if he's really cruel to them, or for him if he's nice to them, that God will accept their prayer. We find this narrated in Ahmad, Abu Dawood, At-Tirmidhi, and Ibn Majah collection. Finally, may I just add one more point, that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, draws our attention to the fact that the reward for being kind to parents may not even have to wait until the Day of Judgment, that we could get the consequence in our own lives. In a saying narrated in At-Tabarani, he said, "Be kind and good to your parents so that God may make your own children good to you, that is good to you when you grow old. And be chaste, your women also will be chaste as well." So there's plenty of this, and even with this extensive quotation from Hadith, I'm not even quoting everything that the Prophet said by way of goodness to parents.
Well, now, in these quotations that you've made, the extensive quotations from the Quran and from the prophetic traditions, repeated references made to being good to parents. Could you perhaps explain, for the benefit of our viewers, what this involves? What does goodness translated into specific actions mean?
Okay, I had some difficulty translating from Arabic to English here. Actually, the original word that appears in many of these quotations actually is in Arabic birr. If you transliterate that, it would be like B-I-R-R, birr. We loosely use the term being good, which is one aspect really of birr. There is no single word really that expresses the meaning of the Arabic term birr in one word. But you can say that the word birr means more than just even being good or kindness. It's a term which denotes righteousness, or what is right, what is good. It denotes kindness, compassion, reverence, respect, obedience. These
patience.
Are all
patience.
These are all aspects in various angles, really, of the broader term, which is more inclusive term, really, birr. Then it includes then the question of mercy or compassion. In fact, in one saying of the Prophet, as narrated in Al-Bayhaqi, two sayings in Al-Bayhaqi, the same reference. One of them, it says that if you look compassionately to your parents, you will get the reward as if you went for pilgrimage. And the opposite is true. In another saying, it says that if you look to your parents a sharp look or, bad look, that this is not of the application of birr or goodness. That's not part of goodness. You're deviating from goodness if you do that. It includes then respect, veneration, good treatment, which includes not to raise your voice in their presence, as narrated by the Prophet, through the Prophet's words quoted in Ibn Majah, that you don't raise your voice in their presence. It includes also showing them compassion and love. And the best example we find in this is what was narrated on the behavior of the Prophet and his daughter Fatima. as narrated in Abu Dawood and Nasa'i and At-Tirmidhi, that whenever Fatima, the daughter of the Prophet, came, he stood up to welcome her, to kiss her, and seat her in his place. But she was doing also, or acting as a good daughter within the Islamic teachings. Whenever the Prophet also came to her, she stood up, kissed him, and, you know, seated him in her place. So this is, again, not just being kind in the sense of providing what they want, but also in actual love and treatment. It includes also, as well, maintenance for parents if they are old or in need.
Well, now, on this question of maintenance, a number of questions are triggered. What is the circumstances under which one must provide for his parents? Mm-hmm. Is there a limit to this obligation? Mm-hmm. Is the nature of the obligation moral or legal or both?
Well, to start with, the conditions for being responsible for the maintenance of one's own parent are basically three. First, that the parents would be destitute, that they would not have enough for their basic needs. Secondly, that they are not able to earn a living, mm-hmm. because of age or disability or whatever other reason. And the third, that the son who is obliged to provide for this maintenance is able to. That is, he's got enough to provide for himself and his family, as well as for his parents. And what determines ability is not that he's got all the luxuries and then whatever remains goes to his parents. Actually, some jurists said that he would have enough if he had more than his basic needs for one day and one night. That if he has enough food for a day and night, and there's some extra beyond that, and his parents are in need, then he's regarded as able to look after them. As far as your second question, the limits, or what this kind of maintenance really entail or includes, well, it includes everything that's needed, basic needs at least. Food, lodging, clothing, general comfort for the parents. Some jurists, the majority actually, even add that you have to look after their own dependents. You know, if there are dependents, for example, like mm-hmm. orphans who are living with those parents, you're also responsible for their own dependents as well. Your last question was on what?
Whether or not it's a legal or moral obligation or both.
Well, the answer is that it is both of them, in fact. One person came to the Prophet, peace be upon him, and that was narrated in Ibn Majah, and he said, my father wants to take from my money. And the Prophet's answer was beautiful. He says, أنت ومالك لأبيك. He said, you and your property belong to your father. He didn't mean, of course, that he doesn't have any property, but he meant that you shouldn't really be so stingy with your parents who sacrificed for you all of their lives, that you and your property actually should be in the service of your parents. Some jurists, the majority of them in fact, say that the same entitlement, which is both moral and legal, that is, it could be enforced legally under Islamic law if you're neglecting your duty to your parents. They said that this even applies to not only parents but grandparents if they are living, because they are in the same status also mm-hmm. as parents.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, if the parents are not Muslim, are they still entitled to the same support that we just discussed?
Well, they are entitled both for good treatment as well as support. Similar problems actually has risen during the lifetime of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. For example, some people embraced Islam while their mothers or fathers or both remained non-Muslims. And there is a famous story about a companion of the Prophet by the name of Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas. That fellow embraced Islam and he was very convinced. His mother threatened him, almost blackmailed him. She said, all right, I'll fast, I'll abstain from any food and drink until I die unless you reject Islam, you know, and go back to the old ways. And if this happens, everybody would consider you as responsible for my death, which was regarded as something very bad among the Arabs, of course, is that he would have the guilt for the rest of his life. That fellow, Sa'd, was really very, very compliant with the truth. He didn't really accept that threat. And after almost a day and night, when she stopped eating and drinking altogether, he went to her and said, "Mom, if you have 100 souls, and each one of them is going after the other in front of me, I will never reject God again. I will never deviate from the path of truth." Once she learned of his determination, she simply, you know, went back on her word and she started accepting the new situation. And it is mentioned that by some jurists that as a result of this, the one verse was revealed in the Quran in chapter 31, verse 15, which gives some kind of directive in this respect. It says, that's verse 14 and 15, "We have enjoined on man," means mankind, generic term, "to be good to his parents. In difficulty upon difficulty did his mother bear him. And in years twain was his weaning. Hear the command, show gratitude to me," that's to God, "and to your parents. To me is your final goal." And then it goes on, a question pertaining to Sa'd. "But if they," that is your parents, "strive to make you join in worship with me, things of which you have no knowledge, obey them not. Yet bear them company in this life with justice and consideration, and follow the way of those who turn to me in love. In the end, the return of you all is to me, and I will tell you the truth and meaning of what all you did." So in that particular passage in the Quran, there are a couple of major points that one has to remember in an answer to that question. First of all, that obedience to parents in general is required. But if that obedience comes into conflict with obedience to God, then obedience to God comes first. And this applies to all kind of relationship, whether rulers, husbands, wives, you name it, bosses, that obedience of God supersedes obedience to any human being. In fact, the Quran in many places blames those who keep following the footsteps of their parents and reject the truth simply because it sounds to them unfamiliar or uncustomary. That this is no excuse. You have to use your mind and spirit also that God has endowed to you. It is related to a basic principle in Islam, that that of individual responsibility before God in the Day of Judgment. In one conclusive passage in the Quran, in chapter 31, verse 33, when it says that اتقوا ربكم واخشوا يوما, you should fear God and beware of a day where no father can avail of his son anything, nor can a son avail of his father. So ultimately we have to stand our responsibility before God. I could not reject the truth simply because my parents do not approve of it, because I would be punished for that. The Quran also many times refers that the blindly follow things that one has simply been customary following, that does not necessarily mean that this is the right thing to do. The other thing that this passage in the Quran seemed to indicate is that even if parents try to divert the individual from the path of truth, even though you're not required to obey them, you're required still to treat them in kindness, as the verse says, وَصَاحِبْهُمَا فِي الدُّنْيَا مَعْرُفٌ, give them good company, just and compassionate company in this life, so long as, of course, they're not trying by force to prevent you from obeying God. In fact, there's one interesting story that happened in the lifetime of the Prophet. Asma, the daughter of Abu Bakr, a famous companion of the Prophet, peace be upon him, came to the Prophet and she said to him, "My mother came to me hoping that I would be of some help to her, to help her and support her, but she's still not a Muslim yet. What should I do?" And the Prophet said, "You should be still kind to her, provide every help to her," and then he recited a verse in the Quran which says that God does not prohibit you to be kind, equitable and just and compassionate to those, that is, those non-Muslims, who are not fighting you to suppress your faith, or driving you out of your homes, or helping other people to drive you out of your homes. That those people should be treated in compassion and kindness, especially if they were parents.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what about the circumstance where perhaps the parents aren't very compassionate and don't treat you very well? Are you are they still entitled to receive good treatment from you? Are you expected to be kind and fair to them?
Well, again, really, it's the interesting thing that when you study the history of Islam, especially the period, the prophetic period, and the kind of questions that were directed to him, you'll find that, amazingly, the questions raised are very common questions, the same question that many of us raise today. That's why it's much better to go back to this and look for some guidance.
Yes.
Actually, there was a similar incident also to this. The Prophet was sitting with his companions, and then he said, whoever wakes up, or whoever is obeying God by being compassionate to his parents, God will open two doors to paradise for him. And if he had only one parent, God will open one door to paradise. Of course, you need only one door to get into paradise.
Yes.
But that, of course, to emphasize the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever end his day displeasing God because he displeases his parents, God will open two doors for him to get into the hellfire. And if he has only one parent, God will open one door to the hellfire. Well, that's understood. But the interesting thing is that some person sitting there, he said, "O Prophet, even if his parents are unfair and unjust to him," he said, "even if they are unfair, even if they are unfair, even if they are unfair." He repeated it three times. "Wa in dhalama," even. In that case, a person still should be kind to them. This saying was narrated in Al-Hakim and Al-Bayhaqi. One should add to this also that one has to keep in mind the what happens when people get a bit older. I'm not saying that the parents start becoming unfair when he's old. I mean, it could happen at any time. But when the parents are old, they grow feeble, feeble in their health, in terms of physical health, mental capacity also. This may cause them to be a little bit impatient, oversensitive, itchy, sometimes even having poor judgment and unacceptable behavior even. We're not saying here that one should listen to his parents no matter how ridiculous thing they are asking him. We have indicated already that anything that disobeys God should be disregarded. But what we're saying simply that one should keep in mind or be cognizant of this fact, and that to the best possible extent, he should try his best or her best to be kind and to obey the parents in reasonable things. Because the opposite of that is called the uquq, or being rebellion against parents, which is very strongly condemned in various prophetic traditions. In one tradition, in Bukhari and Muslim and Tirmidhi, it says that among the greatest sins is rebellion against parents. And that put it in the same category like murder, for example. In At-Tabarani, it regards disobedience and rebellion against parents, without, of course, good cause, as something which may cause the person to be cursed. In Ahmad and An-Nasa'i, it could prevent the person from entering into paradise. In At-Tabarani, it may be a cause for rejection of one's good deeds, that is not accepted by God. But even the worst of all, as narrated in Al-Bayhaqi, that the Prophet indicated that if a person beats his parents, he would be among those who would be among the first to enter into the hellfire. So there is a very strong warning against this abuse or mistreatment of parents.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've given a signal that our time for today's program is gone. We want to invite you back next week when we'll continue our discussion on the social system of Islam. Thank you for watching. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allah.